believe in yourself, cause it starts with you. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just be.
Our guest this week grew up in Lansing, Michigan, earned a degree from Michigan State University, and played basketball and softball for MSU, and earned a master's degree in PE from Indiana University. From 1985 to 2022, 38 years, she was the University of Michigan's women's softball head coach and was named the Big Ten Coach of the Year 18 times, the most ever by any coach in any sport in Big Ten history. She's the all-time winningest head coach in NCAA Division I softball history and the winningest coach in University of Michigan history in any sport, male or female. Her name? Hutch. Carol Hutchins. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. Welcome to 2026, and welcome, Carol Hutch Hutchins. An honor to have you.
It's my honor to be here in this beautiful building here in downtown Detroit.
All right, let's go back. You're the fifth of six children. Talk about your mom, your dad, and growing up, Lansing, Michigan.
Well, my dad was a Marine, and he was a cop. He was a state trooper for 21 years. And my mom was the inventor of gender equity. She had six children in 6 years. We have a set of twins, and three boys and three girls. And I always tell people my mom made us all feel like we were her favorite, and she treated us all with equal everything, equal number of presents. Everybody got the same birthday cakes. I mean, their favorite, of course. And it was a household that was six kids that were really all the same age. But when you grow up with a police officer for a dad, you live a very disciplined and strict life. And he held us to very high standards.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom?
My mom was one to manage everything that occurred. And like I say, she treated everybody like we were equal. And I really believe she invented equity.
All right. I was listening to Magic Irvin Johnson being interviewed recently. And he said, I went to Everett High School in South Lansing. But the greatest athlete that ever went there was a lady named Carol Hutchins. How good were you?
Well, I do like to tell people that I went to high school. Magic was a sophomore when I was a senior. And I remember when he was named Magic by Fred Stabley Jr. from the Lansing State Journal. And he was such a just magnetic guy. I mean, his charisma just bubbled when he walked down the halls. But I used to shoot around in the gym with him. And I tell people, I taught him how to shoot. And then he made $1 billion, and I didn't.
So, all right, speaking of which, you then went on to Michigan State. I think they gave you $300 a year as sports scholarship. You made a lot of money even in college.
Yes. Well, you know, we all went to Michigan State, all the women that had a chance to play. And Michigan State was one of the premier schools in the state. It was Michigan State, Grand Valley, and Western Michigan had the best women's athletics. And I grew up a mile from Michigan State, so that's where I wanted to go. And we didn't get a scholarship. And, of course, from a family of six, my mom said, how are you going to pay for it? I said, don't worry, I'll get a scholarship. And eventually, I did. It wasn't enough to cover costs, but, you know, we were incredibly grateful for the opportunity to just get to play at that level. And, you know, it just kept getting better.
You got a degree there while playing basketball and softball. Then you got a master's in PE from Indiana. Hutch, how did you ever get into coaching and why?
Well, growing up, I had two really significant people in my life. And one was my high school basketball coach, Ann Johnson. And the other was my summer softball coach, Kay Purvis, who ran the Lansing Laurels, which is a very esteemed women's softball program in Lansing, Michigan. And I played. I was 16 years old with women that were in their 20s and their 30s, and she was in her 40s. And it was a golden opportunity of a lifetime. But both those women took me under their wing and they took me by the ear sometimes. And just, I learned all the values I've learned over the years from my mentors and my role models, and I wanted to be them. And that is really, I knew when I got to college and really got to have coaching all the time that I wanted to be that person for young women like myself.
All right, another mentor, legendary coach, Gail Blevins, Indiana University.
Gail Blevins, I was her assistant when I went down there to be the graduate assistant, and I was had an opportunity to go to school, get my master's degree. And at the time, I mean, she wasn't much older than I and hadn't been in the game a whole. She'd only been coaching there a couple of years herself. But she went on to become one of the icons and legends of our game at Indiana, took them to World Series, and then went on to Iowa. And everybody in the game knew who Gail Blevins was. She's one of the top winners in our game as well. And the fact that she was my first mentor, and we're lifelong friends. We had years of Michigan, Iowa, Iowa, Michigan. It was a lot like the, if you think about the Cold War they talk about with Bo and Woody, it was very similar as we both battled for the Big Ten supremacy for about 10 years.
We're talking to Carol Hutchins. She became the head coach of the Michigan's women's softball team 1985. We're going to ask her what she made that first year. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Carol Hutch Hutchins, the nation's winningest coach in NCAA Division I softball history, and the winningest coach in University of Michigan history in any sport, male or female. Unbelievable. Tall cotton. All right. 1985, they name you head coach, women's softball, University of Michigan. How big was your staff, and what did they pay you?
Well, you have to understand, I came as the assistant. So for 2 years, I was the assistant to Bob DeCarolis, who went on to be a longtime athletic administrator and athletic director at Oregon State. And he had me promoted up as he was going to go into that side of athletics. And my first year as an assistant, I made $3,000. And I worked two other jobs so that I could, of course, afford to live in Ann Arbor. And then when Don Canham interviewed me to be the head coach, he asked me two questions in the interview. The first one was, are you ready? And I lied and said yes. And then the second question was, can you type? And I lied again and said yes. And I thought that was an odd question, but you know, I'd never really met him. And so when I got my appointment sheet, September 1st was my first full day of being the head coach. The appointment sheet said 10-month, 50% athletics, 50% clerk typist. And I found out that meant I only got paid 10 months of the year. I found out it meant that I was part-time athletic coach and part-time secretary to our senior women's administrator, or our women's athletic director at that time, Phyllis Oker. And I answered department phones from 8 to noon every day before I could go out to the practice fields. And then I would meet with my assistant coach, Maria Resendez, who I'd brought from Texas A&M. And she was part-time. She had a full-time job elsewhere. I made $15,000, and I honestly don't remember what Maria made, but I'm pretty sure it was a lot less than that.
You had to take care of the field. You were on the tractor cutting grass.
The resources available at that time and the interest in women's sports actually excelling. Keep in mind, this was the Title IX evolution and revolution era, and athletic departments were being forced to add women to their rosters, but most athletic directors didn't take kindly to that, and ours being one of them. Don Canham was famous for lobbying Congress against Title IX. He said it would ruin men's athletics and, in particular, college football. And so we weren't particularly well-resourced, and we didn't have—none of us were full-time. We all had other jobs in the department. And meanwhile, of course, baseball had three full-time coaches, and they had people that took care of their fields and got them ready for games. And those are all the jobs that were on my plate. I would borrow Bud Middaugh's tractor every day to groom the fields and go out and personally pull the weeds and try to find a way to water. You have to water the grass, and you have to water the infield to keep it from being too rock hard.
What's the first time you met Bo?
Gosh, I don't know if I remember exactly the first time, but I had wandered up to his office a few times. But he did come in to practice one day. He used to come in and walk around the field house, his exercise routine. And he saw me and all my players in ragtag outfits. And we only had one set of one T-shirt, one pair of shorts that said Michigan Women's Athletics. And then we'd had one sweatshirt and one pair of sweatpants. That's the only thing they provided us. So many days of the week, the kids just wore whatever, myself included. And one day I may have had on MSU, which set him off. And honestly, in hindsight, obviously that was dumb. But he asked me, what are we wearing? And I told him the situation. And he said, what do you mean you don't have practice gear? What do you mean you don't have laundry? And he set out and sure enough helped us get more athletic gear for our women. And I found that I had to go to him one time because we all used the indoor field house. And of course, football had it all day, 8 to 6. Baseball had it from 6 to 8:30 or 9. And then the women's softball team could come in and practice during the winter months.
Speaking of wearing gear, talk about wearing the Block M. What does it mean?
We teach our student-athletes, and to this day, I know our program still does it. It's the greatest privilege you will ever have. You are playing for something bigger than yourself. You're representing the entire institution and one of the world-class institutions in the world, and you have to hold yourself to higher standards than anybody else. And that's what we, I believe, helped make us tick over the years, is our student-athletes. That was embedded in their DNA. Because when you come to Michigan to play softball, you're only going to wear that Block M if you wear it right.
You're legendary. When we met at Panera's, half the people knew who you were, all right? So I went to ChatGPT. I says, give me the 25 best quotes from Hutch. Number two, your duty is to leave the program better than when you found it.
Everybody, when you come into the program, and I believe, honestly, all of us people here in the world, our job is to leave it better for the people who come after us. And that doesn't always equate into wins on the field, but creating a great culture of people that are committed to the values of the University of Michigan and the opportunity that they get, and teaching that to the kids who come in. You know, the seniors teach it to the freshmen and pay it forward. And honestly, that's part of what a culture is about and what our culture has always been about.
As I read these quotes, Hutch, you could be Bo, or Bo could be you. Number nine, it's about the program. You take care of the program, and the program will take care of you.
You know, I have to tell you that the two greatest mentors that I had since I got to Michigan were literally Bo and Lloyd Carr. And I followed everything they said, everything they did. And once Bo became the AD and then settled into retirement, he followed us. He was a big fan of our softball program, as was Lloyd Carr. And Lloyd, even in his actual coaching days, he would come by at least one game a year. And when we won the whole thing, when I stepped off the bus, he greeted us with his entire staff. And so those guys really understood Michigan, I think, better than any other single people that I've ever known.
One more quote. If you're raised really well, raised to be humble, to work hard, not to make excuses, then an expectation to be great with humility will arise.
Well, I think humility is probably one of the most important and maybe overlooked qualities in leadership, because humility just means that you don't know everything and you surround yourself with people. And I was really good at surrounding myself with people that made me who I became, would challenge me when necessary. And nobody knows everything. And when you think you're the smartest person in the room, you probably need to invite somebody else into the room. And I viewed it that way. I knew my strengths and weaknesses. And I think that's a really important quality.
We're talking to Carol Hutchins. When we come back, we're going to ask her about the famous U of M fight song. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula. We're with Carol Hutchins from 1985 to 2022. 38 years, she was the University of Michigan's women's softball head coach. She led them to their first national championship, any team east of the Mississippi, in 2005, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But you say, Jack, I think I've heard that fight song 100,000 times. When you hear it, what do you think?
I think, especially now that I'm not on the field every day, my favorite part of fall practice, and I love practice and being outside all fall and training our kids, the new kids, but we could overhear the band every day because they were just a block away from us practicing over on El Bell Field, and we would hear the fight song and the fanfare every day. And to me, listening to it over our practice, I mean, it still gives me chills. It just, to me, put it all together.
Okay, let's go to June 8th, 2005. Bonnie, for the first time ever, a college women's softball team wins the national championship that's east of the Mississippi. One, why was it so hard for a team east of the Mississippi to win, and especially a northern team? And then talk about winning the national championship.
Well, I think that just the basically the base of softball and college softball players really was largely out of the West Coast. And you saw Arizona and UCLA on top of the national scene for the first 20 years of college softball from 82 through, you know, the late 90s. It was Arizona, UCLA, 1 and 2, and then everybody else started at like number 15 or 20. That's how much better they were than everybody. And UCLA, of course, had their talent right down the road. But as college softball grew, what really grew was youth softball and the young kids who play in all the competitive 12 and under and 14 and under and 16 and under. They all were aspiring to get a chance to go to college and play softball. And the boom was all over the country. And great players had more opportunity to play really competitively everywhere in the country, including in the state of Michigan. But we recruited largely out of the Midwest, especially out of Michigan. We wanted the best players in Michigan to stay in Michigan. We recruited heavily in Illinois. But we had, you know, kids from all over the country as well. And I think the boom of softball in general is what helped lead to our opportunity to win the whole thing.
Okay. You win it on June 8th, 2005. Hutch, when you put your head on that pillow that night, what did you think?
Wow. I'm pretty sure I didn't put my head on the pillow. I don't recall sleeping that night. You know, the greatest joy, and it people ask how nervous you are in the dugout. You know, you're not, you know, because you understand you don't have a whole lot of control over this. And you're just trying to keep your kids one pitch at a time focused, keep their mindset just on the next pitch. It's the only pitch in the entire year that matters. Our kids were so good at it, and they were so bought in. And it was such a group that celebrated our great young talent because we had some really great freshmen that year. We had seniors who just kept telling everybody, we're going to win it. And even when we lost the few games we lost that year, we had a group of kids that never bothered them. They were like, it's no big deal, and we're going to win the next. So it was a great group of kids that really believed. So watching them win it and watching them celebrate and then watching my senior, and I think I told you this when we met, one of the greatest moments in our history was when our senior shortstop who was one of our best players, but she struck out with the go-ahead runs in extra innings on base, and she turned to our freshman on deck, said, "You got this. Get it done." And that kid was just beaming with, "I can do it," and she hit it over the fence for history. But that same senior stood up on the podium in the follow-up, you know, the interviews afterwards, and they asked her, her name was Jessie Merchant, she now is an associate head coach at Stanford, and they said, "Jessie, is this your greatest moment?" And she said, "No." So I looked down thinking, what on earth is she going to say? And she said, "Putting on my Michigan jersey every day is my greatest moment." And I believe that's why we win, because that's the kind of kids that were playing in our program at that time.
Well, Hutch, in those 38 years, you won 1,707 times. All right? You're the all-time winningest coach, male or female, in U of M history. That's unbelievable.
You know, people talk about those things a lot, and those are things that it's a culmination of a lot of people, not just me, and I get a lot of credit for it, but it's a lot of people. There's over 250 alums that are a part of that journey, and there's a tremendous coaching staff, some who are still in place, who've been with me, who were with me the majority of that time, the bulk of it. And a university that really got behind us and said, "Wow, this is really good stuff." And they built us a stadium, and we fill it every weekend. And, you know, it's not one person's accolades or success. It's really, it's about the program.
All right. Nearly 300 young ladies played for you, carried you over those 38 years. Hutch, what's the biggest thing those young women taught you?
You know what? They've taught me everything I know in coaching, because you learn how to coach by coaching. You're not born some like brilliant strategist and brilliant person. But no matter what, they taught me that this game is still about people, and it's all about the people in the game. And it doesn't really matter. You can't really win big without talent. But unless you have a group of people that you can bring together all on the same page, and those kids that needed, they needed their coaching staff to not just believe in them, but to be there for them through all the other parts of their lives, whether they were having a hard time in a class or having a hard time finding their classes, meaning they didn't always remember to go to class. You just have to be that apparent figure to them and find a way to give them love and give them tough love. And they respond to that.
All right, when you got into the National Female College Hall of Fame, your players presented you with a scrapbook.
Yeah.
And one, there was a note from one saying, quote, "I came here a girl with potential and left here a woman with no limits."
I just think that says it all. That's, we're here to help. Athletics is meant to be part of the educational arm of any institution. That's why we're involved in college. And we help them grow up. And to me, working with that age group of kids who are, you know, just coming out of their teenage years into full adults, and we help shape them, we help them create their and mold their values and find their themselves and find their values. And a lot of it is through hard times. I mean, people remember winning. They don't know what it's like after we lose and how difficult it is, or when things don't go our way, and when kids get pulled from a game and they're all upset and their parents are upset. And, you know, the things they learn, it's what it's all about. And they go on and use those values the rest of their life.
I've always marveled listening to Tom Izzo, Lloyd Carr, Greg Campy, yourself. You remember every one of those 25 girls, even the one at the far end of the bench, that played for you in 86, 89, 92. How do you do that?
It's no different than the people in your life that are closest to you, and I'm sure you have many, because you are certainly well connected and offer a lot of love to people. You just know them, and we spend all day every day together for 4 years or more, and you're part of their lives forever, and they're part of my life forever. You know, I know their children, I know their significant others, their husbands, I know what they do in life, and we stay in touch.
We're talking to Hutch, and we stay in touch. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble."
The great Ernie Harwell.
"My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God."
And the voices of our generation.
"I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis."
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohom. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Hutch, Carol Hutchins. She was named the Big Ten Coach of the Year 18 times. The most ever by any coach in any sport in Big Ten history. Unbelievable. Speaking of great coaches, what do they all have in common?
Oh. Well, you know, I'm a huge fan of Tom Izzo, and I'm a huge fan of Lloyd Carr, just to use examples of, they're so different. But they're passionate about their program, their passion, and your program is your people. And I think great coaches have, people all have passions, but they're passionate about the people in the program and understand that we're here to serve them and help them serve the university or to serve whomever it is that they play for. And I think most coaches that are great really are all in, because we don't coach robots. We're not just about winning. We are here to serve our people and help them with all the things in life. And I believe the values you learn in athletics are as great as any lessons or values you learn in anything.
I've been blessed to have another great U of M coach, John Beilein.
Oh, yes.
What impressed you the most about John Beilein?
He's so thoughtful, and I love to tell the story when we were all in the same building. I came in every day to work and went in the mail room, which is where the coffee pot is.
And the typewriter's still there?
There was no typewriter left anymore. But John Beilein was always in there making the coffee. And if we'd run out, I'd be like, "John, is there going to be more coffee?" But he was thoughtful. And I mean in everything he does. And he's so meticulous. He's got a system. He finds the players that fit the system. And I found that he, more than anything, whether you were just the softball coach or a softball player or just anybody else, he treated everybody with great respect and kindness. He always had time for you. He helped us recruit a player once that he had known the father from the coaching days way back when, and said, "I'd love to talk to her," and came right up and sat in my office. He was just, he was one of us and really a great guy.
All right. You became the head coach of Michigan 1985. That's 40 years ago. I think you were 16.
Okay. Yes.
How has college softball changed in those 40 years?
Oh, my. It has just, first of all, it's boomed because of the power of TV. I mean, we have become one of the greatest TV sports. We our ESPN World Series outdraws many of the male sports, and the year we won it, we were outdrawing some of the NHL and NBA playoffs. People love college softball, and even Bo was like, watch this on TV, and he told me the story the night we won. His buddies wanted to go golfing and do all these things. He said, no, you're going to come to my house, and we're going to watch the softball game. And he says when we hit it over the fence, he leapt out of his chair. But we have the attention of the world, and it's helped the game propel. It's helped all the youth levels grow. We're one of the fastest-growing women's sports. And the players today are bigger and stronger and better trained. And, I mean, it's like Major League.
All right. What's your view, Hutch, on the role of analytics technology in softball sports today?
Well, as that evolved, I found that my lack of my being older than most folks and not as technologically, what they call technologically challenged. But I relied on my staff for the analytics that made sense to me. And I did have a chance to speak with Joe Maddon once in his batting practice. And I asked him about that because I knew that was a challenge for me to understand how to apply it. And he reinforced the fact that if you try to apply something that you don't really understand, you're going to mess it up. And he told me that he still used the most important thing, which was his people skills and instincts to coach with, which was really how I rolled. But is there room for it? Is there role for it? I'd love to measure the players' exit velocities off the bat. And I found that you get better at things you measure. So we did some of that. But I know our staff has evolved much further since I'm no longer the one calling those shots.
Who's calling the shots today?
The head softball coach is my longtime assistant coach, Bonnie Thole. She's entering her fourth year. She has won the last two Big Ten tournament titles, which is a huge accomplishment, especially with the addition of some of the West Coast powerhouses. And in last year's tournament, they were able to knock off both Oregon and UCLA, who went on to make the College World Series. The trajectory is right where it should be.
She played for you.
And she played.
And she's from the south side of Chicago.
That's, yes.
She and our new Pope, the two most famous from the south side of Chicago.
Yes. Yep. You know, we recruited Chicago, especially the south side. We've had a number of young women from there. And I'm from Lansing, Michigan, but I understood one thing. These kids were tough. They were coachable. And I mean, because they took coaching. And I love the Chicagoland kids. We had tremendous success with many of them.
All right. Tom Izzo talks a lot about the importance of leadership within a team, in the locker room, et cetera. Please.
Well, there's no question. You are trying to create a program where the players run the team. I mean, as the leader of the team, I consider myself the general. But you've got to have the drill sergeants in the locker room keeping the troops marching in the same direction. And so, you know, we spend time with the older kids who we know are going to be, whether they're the captains, but the influencers, because there's certain people that are the influencers in any organization, and try to make sure as they're influencing, we're all sending the same messages. And that means a lot of great communication from the top, myself, because I know they're going to be leading the team, whether they're leading them to the parties or leading them to get home in time for curfew. These are the kids that are going to propel whether we are successful at the highest level that we can be.
Speaking of leadership from the top, David Brandon.
David Brandon was a fantastic athletic director, from my view, because when he came into Michigan and brought his CEO expertise, which, of course, there's all types of athletic directors, but his goal was for everybody to be great, not just a couple of our sports. And he made it happen. He made all of our facilities. He wanted them to be the best. And so many, you look at our softball facilities, you know, we had already built our stadium, but now we have this tremendous locker room and office space, and he built the field hockey facilities. He, of course, he upgraded so many of our facilities, and he really believed in everybody. He wanted everybody at Michigan to be held to the highest standards. I liked that.
The first female president in U of M history, its 13th president from 2002 to 2014, Dr. Mary Sue Coleman.
I was very fortunate, as so many of us were. She was a big fan of not just softball, but of athletics. And she knew its place at our university, which, of course, as most people say, we are the front porch of the university. But the medical system and the hospital systems, there's a lot of things that are very important in Michigan. But we had our place, and she was very visible and involved. She would come to games. She would call many of us when we had success. I thought she was a tremendous leader. She really was gifted at keeping our university all somehow connected to each other.
In a little more than a month, Bonnie's going to take her team down to Florida in the sunshine. You'll go with her, hopefully. But if she said, I need you to give them a one-minute pep talk as we embark on 2026, what would you tell the kids?
Well, I don't always go with them, but I do watch them. I travel occasionally, and she's given me a few opportunities when I walk in the door to watch them practice. And she'll say, hey, Hutch is here. What do you have to say? And really, I tell them that the journey, it's not about the first game of the year. It's about the last game of the year. And every game you play in February and in March, you're setting yourself up to get to the last game. And we always want our last game to be in June. But it's a hard road. And if you walk into it thinking, wow, I've worked so hard, now everything's going to go my way, go back and start over, because the mindset of a champion is what we need and we need to create. And you're going to be a champion when you walk in every day just to win today and play today and to get better today. And the goal is that you're a team, you're like a potted plant. You become. What is our team going to become? And we're going to water the plant, and they're going to grow and blossom and bloom, hopefully, in June.
Carol Hutch Hutchins, success is a journey, not a destination. And you, ma'am, are a phenomenal success.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for all you do. Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. Make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken. Believe in yourself.